If you like new stuff before anybody else, if you like to keep your finger on the pulse, if you like the future and want to be in it, keep on listening, because we'll start in a minute. Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. Because technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Ha, stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech, 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 tech webcast. Ha, ha. Tech, 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 tech webcast. Let's go!
Welcome to episode 391 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 20th of August, 2016. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday at 12 p.m. Melbourne time. Rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast and download the Tech Webcast iPhone or Android app. And also, without forgetting, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/techwebcast. Your hosts for today are Brad, Jacob, Steve and myself, Daryl, and our very special guests are Andy and Kay Walker from andywalker.com. Good afternoon, Brad.
Good afternoon, Daryl. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm very well. Very well indeed.
How's your week been, mate?
A good steady week. Just trying out some new video conferencing stuff at work. We seem to be endlessly trying stuff out. So we're using Zoom.
Okay, sweet. Now, I've got an answer to your problem. You mentioned on Facebook yesterday, the other day, Jacob, you mentioned to me.
Page.
Now, I know why you can't edit, because you know why you can't edit it?
No, it wasn't edited. It's got a big red banner on there saying I'm not allowed to change the name.
Oh, you can't change the name?
Yeah, I can't change the name.
And How many likes do you have?
10.
Oh, well, there you go. You need 100 before you can do anything.
Well, it was funny because it just said it didn't say like you can't do it because you haven't got 100. It just said it's got a big red banner which now appears whenever I see it, not when other people see it, but when I see it, which is you are not allowed to change the website name. And when I clicked through it, it said you can appeal against it, which I did.
Okay.
And I've sent several messages through their appeals and they've never got back to me.
Damn you, Facebook.
And I don't know whether it was because the name I tried to change it to, it was similar to, say, an existing business or something, which is fine, that's understandable, but they never said anything. It's just, I've just lumped this big red, which I hate looking at when I actually look at the page.
What you should do? Just delete the page and just start over again.
That's what I'm going to do. I've deleted it, but of course, being Facebook, they say it's now going into a process and in 14 days it'll be deleted, you know, so...
Yeah.
So that's right. That was basically the idea. Is I'll delete it, and then I'll try and set it going again with the name. But I understand if it was similar to a name in use, and particularly if it was a business name, that Facebook might say, hold on, you know, that might confuse it. But there was no notification. That it was just this big red banner across it saying you have, you know, conditions on your page, and it says you cannot change the page name. For, you know, basically forever, and I've appealed, like, because I have a button to say appeal if you don't agree with it, and I've clicked that, and I've actually typed, you know, messages in the little box there and said, well, can you explain why it's been, and can you please get rid of that big red banner, because I hate it, you know, even if I can't change the name. But anyway, they didn't get back to me, so.
All right.
So that's my story.
I thought I had a fix for you, but that's not the problem.
Anyway. Thanks for thinking of the fix.
That's what Jacob said. He goes, oh, you can't edit the page or something. And then I said, well, you need 100 likes before you can do anything.
Editing, I can do everything else, except I now can't change the page name. Okay. And that's a pain if you wanted to. So, yeah.
Jacob Jones, welcome back to the podcast, mate.
Thank you.
How's your week been, buddy?
I don't want to say.
What?
One of those weeks.
You don't want to say?
No, it's just that bad. I don't want to say.
Okay, man. All right, good stuff, Jacob. Steve, how's your week been, mate? Welcome back.
Oh, it's been good. Just, not busy, but, you know, Mostly working and the baby, and that's about it, I guess.
Good stuff. So we've got no news stories, say, Joel, so let's try and keep it under 40 minutes, mate.
You're mentioned, no
we'll have a chat with Kay and Andy about their new book, and looking forward to it. Have you seen it? The new book, have you seen it?
I've been reading the website. But I haven't purchased the book yet. So, but I've been looking at reading the website. So I'm very interested to hear all about it.
Can't wait to hear about it. Yeah, good to have you back, Steve.
Oh yeah, it's good to be back.
Good stuff. Welcome, Andy and Kay to the podcast.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here, and I promise you that the book is much more interesting than the website. Well, so if you like the website, boy, you would love the book.
Love the book.
Yeah, what's actually the name of the book?
It's called Super You, How Technology is Revolutionizing What It Means to Be Human. And if you want to get a taste of it, actually speaking of the website, you can go to the website's readsuperyou.com, and you can go there and download a whole entire chapter. The chapter is about hyperlongevity and living forever. So it's directly from, we give that chapter away. It's like nine chapters in the book. So you get to read one ninth of the book for free.
How much is the book to buy, Andy, on, with a hardcover book?
Oh, in Australian dollars, not sure. I've seen it, US dollars, and 16 US dollars.
So probably about $30. Back. Probably about $30 for us.
Yeah. And then $10 for the.
On Kindle.
Yeah. For Kindle.
Okay, so. Nice.
Yeah, so it's not super expensive. I think it's $29.95 retail. Blah blah blah. But they always discount.
Can you guys sign the book if someone buys it?
Well, we could send you a copy if you want to pay the shipping. We'll be more than happy to buy a copy here, sign it, and ship it out to you, Australia.
All right. Yeah. All right, done, man. Mm-hmm. I'll send you. Just send me your PayPal info, and I'll let me know. Yeah. Okay. So, Daryl, any questions for Andy? Welcome to the show, Andy and Kay. Andy, you want to give a quick background on what you've been up to, and what you do on that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, a lot of your audience probably knows me from 10 years ago. Call for Help. I was one of the co-hosts of Call for Help with Leo Laporte and Amber MacArthur, Amber Mac. And a decade later, I live in Florida now with Kay. Kay and I have been married for a few years, and we have a small cyborg called Carter. we live in Tampa, Florida now. I moved from Toronto several years ago, and you guys probably know that I've written a bunch of books. Kay was studying neuroscience and is a life hacker, runs a website called awesomelifeclub.com, and so we decided, besides collaborating on a small child, we decided to collaborate on a book too. One of my editors from Q Publishing pinged me one day on Facebook and said, "Hey, Andy, we haven't done a book in a while. I had this crazy idea. I was sitting on the couch the other week watching the National Geographic Channel, and I saw this crazy documentary on these guys called The Grinders. And The Grinders are a bunch of guys in their garage who are cutting open their fingertips and putting magnets underneath, doing self-surgery basically, so that they can enhance their ability to, feel magnetic fields, RF fields. Boy, that's crazy, the merger of technology and flesh. Can you write a book on it?" So this is going back, what was it, Kay? 3 years ago? Mm-hmm. 3 years ago now? So Kay and I were looking for a project, and we were in the process of moving to Florida, and thought, I was sort of like, I don't know if I want to write another book because it's a lot of work. And Kay was like,
"We have to.
Yeah, we have to.
This topic is incredible, and we have to."
Yeah. So put together a book proposal and send it off to Q because it had to be validated by the higher ups, and decided to meet. What we discovered in the exploration of the book was that, you guys know this probably better than I do, or as well as I do, that the world of technology is fast integrating with human being, right?
Yep.
Stem cells and neurochips and genetic hacking and designer babies and you know, hacking your longevity for, you know, the ability to live beyond 100 and maybe, you know, immortally if you so choose. And so all those topics kind of flowed into the book, and we started doing some research. Kay reached out to a bunch of really cool scientists to get us started. And you, who did you reach? Tell him, right?
Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah.
Who's from Google.
From Google. And, you know, he's the guy that invented the Kurzweil synthesizer, Texas speech, you know, that kind of thing. He wrote a book called The Singularity is Near. And so he was kind of the inspiration for the kind of the backbone of the book. The idea that technology improvement is accelerating and not just linearly, like not just improving, it seems to go and be going fast, but, you know, he says logarithmically. And he's, what he shows is that the faster technology improves, the faster technology improves. And it's going on this like crazy upward swing towards a date in the future, likely 2045, where we kind of can't see beyond that point. But that's the point, he says, when machines will, you know, be incredibly intelligent, smarter than human being. And at that point, what's going to happen to humanity and technology? And is technology humanity? Is humanity technology? And that kind of thing. So, and we're moving, you know, in that direction. So we kind of interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and everything came from that, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, just has been a fascinating project. You know, I know you reached you reached for us, Kevin Warwick. He's known as Mr. Cyborg, a UK scientist, and he's, we love him because he was he had put brain, well, basically a connection into his own skull, connected himself to Wi-Fi, and then that connection went to his wife, to a little sensor in her arm. So every time she kind of flinched her forearm, he got a little pulse in the middle of his head. So he was connected to her, you know. And so, again, it was like the merger of flesh and technology. And so we just kind of went down that path to find out, you know, what really is it going to be like to be human in the next decade, next couple of decades, as we move into 2045 and this idea of the singularity.
Hmm. I could sounds very interesting. Sounds, yes, awesome. Sounds like-
of the, out of the Borg in Star Trek.
When well, was right. Like, well, and that's kind of
resistance
is it.
Futile.
Yeah, resistance exactly. Is futile, you know. It's astonishing is what it is. You know, I mean, we obviously live in an amazing, amazing world right now. Like, mm-hmm. I did an interview this morning with a national Canadian broadcaster about how Uber's putting, you know, self-driving taxis into Pittsburgh. You know, and this is something we were talking about 6 or 7 years ago, kind of when there was a DARPA challenge where they were, you know, students were trying to get cars across a 100-mile stretch of desert autonomously. And you know, now they're, Volvo is building these vehicles with for Uber, and they're going into Pittsburgh to drive people around. Like, what the heck, right?
Jeez.
What's going on? It's astonishing, you know? So we're in for a really interesting next couple of decades, I would say.
All right. Any questions, Steve?
Yeah, I'm not saying I kept up with it, but I do know of some uses with combining technology with humans. For instance, the blind people actually being able to see, well, not quite as much as a human eye would. But they actually put some kind of sensor into this blind man's eye, and then they hooked up something. I don't know if it was a computer connection, and then it was kind of a rudimentary sight. It was quite pixelated, but you know, he could see shapes and colors and things like that.
Yeah, there's a study done Duke University, I think it was. So this guy, it basically put a chip into his cornea and then flipped it on, and all of a sudden he could see. He had not been able to see. So, I mean, great, you know, that's great, Steve. I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing that's happening, right? It's exactly the kind of thing that's happening. You're giving sight to sightless people using crazy, crazy technology, like the merger of flesh and silicon. It's unbelievable.
Well, there's other things too. Not necessarily, you know, things that are less invasive, like the use of electroskeletons now, kind of like a suit, and where it would augment, you know, your strength, I guess. And yeah. I think even the Army, the U.S. Army, even considered maybe using that. I don't know if they're using it now, but
ongoing studies.
The objects and things like that.
Yeah, it's basically, it's what's the movie? I guess it's Aliens, I guess, where they, you know, that giant sort of suit, the guy puts on a big suit and can lift up, you know, heavy stuff like a Transformer outfit. All real. Like, you can't pick things up, you know, that are 10 times as heavy as a human being can carry, right? There was, in the research, we talked to one guy who, we didn't speak to him, but we kind of put him in the book. He had given a paraplegic the ability to kick a ball. Right, so it basically put him into one of these suits, figure out a way to wire the electronics into his nerves, and he could get out of a chair and walk along and kick the ball at one of the, it was an event in South America someplace, if I recall. You know, I read somewhere this morning that they found a way to give paraplegics the ability to walk now. There's a new study out.
Yeah, there's two organizations, one in the US and one in Australia, that have been both funded, and they're both working on that same project. And I saw that on the news the other night here, and it showed like a little, it wasn't a sensor, but it was like a little wire that they put in this guy's body. And he had, he's missing an arm, and they put, you know, the obviously bionic arm, for the want of a better word, on. And for the first time, he was able, with thought, he was able to pick up a glass and drink from it. And he could actually feel the glass, like his hand around the glass. It wasn't, you know, so and yeah, it's sort of amazing. And so it should, won't be too, if this continues, it won't be too many more years, I don't think, until paraplegics will be a thing of the past.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, well, and there's this artificial, like they're building artificial skin and limbs that actually have sensations, as you said. And that's kind of the first tier, right, of emerging technology with flesh, you know, where you're putting kind of a prosthesis on somebody and giving them similar capabilities to what they had when they were born, you know, before they had an incident and they lost a limb or whatever. But the next thing beyond that, the next natural step beyond that is going to be regrowth of the flesh that's missing. So, you know, growing stubs of arms into full arms. Refusing spines and having the nerve tissue regenerate. And those kinds of things will be made possible with the idea of stem cells, which until very recently have only been available in cord blood of babies and, you know, in new, you know, fetuses and that sort of thing. And so it was highly controversial to use that material. But now they've found a way to have, you know, a person's cells extract them from, say, fat tissue and engineer them so that they can go back to their simple version of themselves. And they've only found a way right now to grow, say, a fat cell into a fat cell or a muscle cell into a muscle cell. But at the raw level of stem cell, you have the cell go back to its infancy stage, and then it can grow into any type of cell from that point on.
Which is called pluripotent
stem cells. That's why you're my wife. Pluripotent stem cells, exactly. So once they harness that technology, you can imagine, right? So you got to...
Which they're very close to doing.
Yeah.
Within the next 5 years, we should see that.
We should see that. So now you can grow, you know, you grow things that are missing, where you can replace things that are diseased, you know, new livers, for example. You know, instead of, I don't have to quit drinking, I can just regrow myself a new liver. You know, that would be good. You know, but I mean, and that's, you know, I joke, but it's real science.
Yeah. Now we're talking about like growing, like it's grown somewhere else and then they reattach it, or are you talking about the actual person regrowing it?
Well, there's two approaches. Yeah, there's two approaches. It's a good question, actually. So in one case, they would lab grow a new organ for this. We talk about like organs, for example, organ replacement, right? So they found a way to...
Or 3D printing.
Well, yeah. I mean, essentially, what they'll do is they'll create like this the scaffolding out of organic material, and then spray like with like an inkjet printer the cells onto this thing to regenerate this, you know, a liver or something along those lines. That's one way to do it. And they've done fairly complex organs, and they're trying to just find a way to grow blood vessels into this tissue now. So that was the hard part. So then they have this fully grown replacement liver tissue that they can then cut you open and pop it in. But then the next breakthrough will be to giving you an injection which instructs your cells and your DNA and to replicate itself and to go to the site where there is an injury or something missing and regenerate from there. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine, and we don't know how this is going to work yet because it's not yet possible, but they're heading in the direction where somebody loses a limb, they have a stump, and they get genetically treated by either stem cells or some sort of genetic engineering where the stump starts to regrow into a basic arm, and which grows a hand, which grows fingers, and suddenly becomes a fully fledged replacement limb.
It's funny you mentioned that with because there's actually a movie, of course, with Bruce Willis, The Fifth Element, that's very much does that, where they have this some kind of material, organic material, and then they reconstruct this person. You know, all they had was an arm, and they actually reconstructed the whole. Well, of course, this is going far, far, far in the future. I mean, it never happened, but still, but, it's kind of amazing.
You
know, where,
yeah. But it's not that far in the future, to tell you the truth. I mean, now you would think that, you know, that's science fiction, right? And then that movie was, what, 10 years, 15 years ago. But, I mean, we're talking about regrowing somebody from an arm. It probably will happen. You know, the question is, can you regrow somebody, you know, and then get them back alive? Maybe, probably. You know, nothing is impossible at this point. As far, you know, from where we sit researching this book, nothing seems impossible anymore.
And actually, the consensus we got from speaking to all these scientists was that much of the technology, a lot of the technology is there or almost there and could progress if the funding was there, if the, if, you know, governments would approve certain research faster.
People get out of the way.
Our institutions and policymakers are in the way, in much
of
the way.
Nervous and scared. You know how politicians are, right? They're 15 years behind the reality, right? And with technology accelerating the way it is, I mean, public policy is not keeping up in any of these places. I mean,
and it scares people.
Yeah,
it scares people. Like, we're talking right now about all these beautiful medical things. You know, we were just talking about regrowing limbs and, you know, and how amazing is that? But as it gets more and more invasive and just regular people who have no medical issues start doing crazy things and becoming superhuman, it gets scary for people.
Mm-hmm. But too bad.
It's gonna happen. It's coming. You know,
and there's no stopping it.
There's no stopping it.
I mean, it's the cat's out of the bag at this point, right? You can't stop it now. Even if you tried, you couldn't stop it.
Have to go out in the woods and be a hermit to get away from it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and even then,
you can't really get away from technology.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, though. I mean, you could go live in the mountains in a cave, perhaps. And, you know, that's the other interesting thing, right? There is going to be, you just know that's going to be the anti-techers, right? The people that go, I want to be the way I was when I came out of my mama's belly, right? And they're going to go off and live in the woods in the communes, and they're going to, you know, renounce technology, and they're going to die like, you know, mortals, and the rest of us are going to keep going and regrow our limbs and, you know, learn 15 languages because of brain chips and live forever, which I say, great. Good. Let them live in their caves. You know, let's get on with this.
So. All right. Any questions, Daryl, for Steve? For Andy.
For Steve.
Steve didn't write the book.
Well, it was interesting because what you were saying in the end there was what I'd been thinking about as in questions. It's public policy and that, well, it's always behind because technology tends to gallop ahead anyway. But there is this sort of the ethical questions and that need to be asked. And I think one issue that would bring along things along quicker is that you have lots of public debate. In other words, it's not just discussed amongst the scientific community and the geeks that understand the technologies, but it's actually brought out into the light of, you say, ordinary people, so that may make a big difference to the sort of fear factor and people sort of thinking, oh my God, you know, Terminator. And but it has been interesting because science itself, Ray Kurzweil's a big supporter of all that, but Stephen Hawking for another was warning of, you know, the rise of the machine and when a machine becomes sentient and what might happen unless we sort of fully understand it. So it's been that sort of toing and froing in the scientific community.
Yeah, I mean, there are some high-profile people that are concerned about, you know, strong AI and the idea that the machines will rise up. we've been taking the position that, you know, so technology is really is something that's artificial outside of the human body, right? Something that enhances your capabilities beyond what you're capable of when it came out of your mother's belly, right? So a hammer is technology and a saw is technology. And, you know, so the world's not run by hammers, right? It's just a tool that we created that help us live a better life. And so that's the premise of any new technology, is that, you know, it's just an extension of us. So, it, you know, people...
And work, in the end, humans are in control.
Yeah, in the end, humans are control.
Because we created
because
it.
Because we created it, and we are it. So one philosophy is that it's not us versus the machines. We are the machines. You know, we will take over because we are it. They are us. We are it. You know, as you said earlier, you know, the Borg, right? It's impossible. You know, we will assimilate you. Well, we're going to assimilate into our technology. Our technology is going to assimilate into us. You know, the difference between smart AI and the human brain enhanced with it is going to be indistinguishable, right? Mm-hmm. So, but there's a tendency, right, for people to look at technology from the place of where they are now. So it's really hard to fathom what, you know, the idea of having something, you know, little critters growing around, flowing around in your brain, connecting you to Google and giving you the built-in on-demand massive intelligence. But essentially, that's what's going to happen. We'll put these disabled, you know, organic material that will float around microscopically in our bloodstream, in our brain, connect to our neurons. That will connect to the net. And when we would think, oh, yeah, there's Brad. I remember hearing his voice. I've never met him. And you would then reach out to Google, and it would give you an image in your head of what it knows about Brad. And then you would reach out and shake Brad's head and go, hey, Brad, nice to meet you, you know. But you didn't have the ability to do that, but the network knows Brad is what he looks like, you know, and basically gives you that on-demand experience. So, you know, at that point, you're Google. You're part of Google. Google's part of you. So if Google runs the world, is it running you or are you running it? You know, it's, again, it's indistinguishable. We tend to think, oh, God, that's not now. That's scary out there. But it's in 10 years' time, we won't think twice about it.
Yeah, and if you think back to other technologies like, you know, the invention of the internet, things like that, we were actually just watching tonight some video footage, some old video footage before the internet, you know, came to be. And there, it was a news broadcaster, and she was talking about one day maybe we'll be able to speak to each other, like, you know, across the world.
Yeah. You know, like, using a computer.
And how, I don't know, this, you know, it was just such a crazy idea to fathom. And now...
Well, look what we're doing now.
We're talking to each other from our phones. Yeah. We go to bed with our phones. We wake up with our phones. It's everywhere, right? So, and there was one day where we didn't know or think or believe that was possible, and it was scary.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting what you said, Andy, about, you know, this linear line of thinking that we all have.
Yeah. It's hard to fathom the improvements, right? I remember seeing an ad for, cell phones back in 2001. And there was this mock-up of this actor who had a phone, and they looked at the phone, and their wife was, and they said, hi, honey, I'm going to bring home, you know, I'm going to the store, I'm bringing home some bread. And then there was a little caption at the end of the commercial that said, one day this will be possible. Well, you know, 14 years later, 15 years later, duh, hello. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, iPhone, FaceTime, blah, blah, blah. It's just, it's second nature. Mm-hmm. So the technology sneaks up on you, right? It's not like it, you know, if a cyborg walked in the door today from 10 years in the future, we would freak out. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you know, when fast forward to 10 years, 2026, you know, a cyborg will walk through our door and we'll go, hey, did you pick up any beer? Oh, yes, sir, I did. I absolutely did, right? And here's your son, by the way. He's okay, you know? I've been looking after him. It's the science fiction perception of it is what freaks people out. And people don't realize that things creep up on them. I mean, can you imagine, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example, imagine, you know, Christopher Columbus, right? So he's the guy that discovered North America, right? Imagine walking up to him on a beach and showing him an iPhone. Where do you start explaining what an iPhone is, right, in 1492? I mean, so I have this chocolate bar-sized thing with a screen, and it's playing a game called Angry Birds. Well, do I explain Angry Birds, or do I explain an app? Do I explain a screen? are those actually critters on your hand? You know, and then it's talking, well, it's got a computer. Well, what's a computer? Well, it's a counting machine. Well, what? Where do you start? Like, it's so far removed from Christopher Columbus's reality. It's just unfathomable. You wouldn't know how to explain that. And we're heading in that direction where in 20 years' time, well, you know, you bring technology forward into today, and we freak out. Oh, my God. What? You know, but that's what's coming.
But yeah, and it's progressive, and you don't notice it when you're living in it.
You don't. No. Hmm. When was the last time you guys looked at your dishwasher?
I don't have a dishwasher.
And thought
about
it. I don't have one. I don't have one.
Thought about it as a piece of technology. Yeah. You know, you don't even notice some of the technology we use.
A laundry machine. And like, when was the last time you looked at a laundry machine? Well, that's a neat machine, right? You just put your clothes in it.
Yep.
It's just part of life.
It's part of your life.
Yep. Yeah. Right?
Only definitely. It stops working.
Oh, yeah, only when it stops working. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, right, when it breaks, right? When it cascades out of your life and you go, oh, God, I can't wash my socks. Yep.
But
it's invisible.
Jacob, any questions for Andy?
Just one.
Go ahead, mate.
When did you start writing your book and when did you make it come out?
Well, it's a great question because, boy, that was an effort. So we started writing this book in the summer. I got the email from Rick in the 2013, summer 2013. So we're going back 3 years.
Right? We told him we could write it in six to 8 months.
Yeah,
we'll just do it. Yeah, we'll figure it out. You know, we'll just, get down to work.
Right.
And, you know, 3 years later. Well, two and a half years.
But, two and a half years of actual writing, because by the time we got the contracts done, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think it was January of 2014 when we started actually physically writing it. And you can imagine in 2.5 years, so you get the end of this manuscript, right, 380 pages or so of content, dozens of interviews, you know, thousands of words, and you get to the end of it and you go, oh, the stuff that we wrote 2.5 years ago is actually out of date. You know, there's so much that's happened.
You got to call people back. You got
to you got to check on your facts and that sort of thing, because time's gone by and things have changed. Yeah. So, and to answer the back half of your question, it came out on the 15th of June.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been out for, you know, for 6 or 7 weeks, mm-hmm. 8 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. I don't think it actually hit bookshelves in North America until, you know, early July, and you know, came out in Kindle at the same time. So, it's only been around for maybe. People are starting to get the first copies now. You know, there's a few people that have obviously bought copies and that sort of thing and read them through and starting to put, you know, reviews on Amazon to our glee. But it's pretty much fresh. Cool. off of the word processor.
Sounds awesome, Andy. Where can people buy it from? And can you ship to Australia, that right? What can they buy in Australia?
Yeah. So if you go to worldwide. I mean, it's available at all major bookstores, a lot of independent booksellers.
Yep.
In Australia, you can go to Amazon and download the Kindle version. You can go to qpublishing.com, which is our publisher, and you can download any one of the versions. You know, the three different ebook versions. You can do a PDF if you really want. They'll ship you a paperback copy anywhere in the world.
Nice.
That's the best way if you really want a physical copy, or you can actually send us an email and we'll ship you one. We'll sign a copy. You know, it's cost you a few more dollars.
I think Jacob wants one too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Apparently, apparently he lives 3 hours from you.
Oh yeah. No, whereabouts do you live, Jacob?
I live in Newberry, Florida.
Oh, no way! Wow, that's just around the corner from us.
So there you go.
Not far anyway. We could meet for lunch in Orlando. How about
that? There you go, Jacob. He can buy lunch. He can shout you lunch.
Oh, that would be all right. That'd be all right. But great. Oh, I didn't realize you're here in Florida. So yeah. So I mean, you can go down to your. I mean, we'll send you. If you guys want copies of PDF, like not PDF, but electronic copies, we'll be happy to send you codes out. You can grab it. And you know, for those of you that want a physical copy with signed copy, just let us know. And we'll.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind a signed copy. I can pay for the postage and the book if you want. If you want the.
Yeah, well, no, we'll PayPal. Give you a book. We'll give you a book. But yeah, if you pay for the shipping, we'll find out how what it costs to put it in the mail, and we're more than happy to get it out to you between us and to Australia.
Too easy, mate. Thanks, Andy, for being on. Kay, thank you for being on. Any more questions, guys, to Andy and Kay before we wrap up the podcast? Daryl?
It's a huge topic. I mean,
it is.
you sort of think about, you know, you could have a podcast going for 4 or 5 hours on technology like that, and then all the moral and ethical implications, and the science and the science fiction, and where we'll be in that sort of time. So my head's spinning. So you'll have to come back on again.
You need the book, Darryl. You need to buy the book, mate.
Yeah, I will get the book, but I mean that'll probably answer some questions. But I'll probably have another fistful of questions.
Oh, you will.
Yeah, you'll have 67,000 questions. But yeah, no, just let you know. We'll get your copies out to you guys, and you can have a look. And then if you can have us back later on,
yeah, we'll have you back.
It'd be great, because it's just one of those topics that you know that you can't do justice with it in sort of one.
That's right.
One podcast.
Yeah.
We haven't told you about designer babies yet.
Go ahead, Annie. Tell us.
Well, okay, really quickly, before we wrap up. So we interviewed this guy, Dr. Jeffrey Steinberg. He runs something called the Fertility Institutes out of Los Angeles. He had been researching albinism, you know, albino people, and trying to find a way to help them, you know, kind of get pigment back into the skin and, you know, give them kind of a normal look. Had discovered how to manipulate traits like eye color, like hair color, and that kind of thing, and also multiple polygenic traits like the ability to play tennis, athleticism, that kind of thing. So he started to offer, he long had been offering the ability to do gender selection. So they would, you know, through IVF, they'd take an egg and sperm, mix it together, and then sort out the resulting imminent babies. And
he's the top guy to go to if you want that. $18,000 it costs.
$18,000 US to get a selected gender selection, right? So he was doing this already, but he realized that he could actually do a trait selection as well. Well, the press got a hold of it, and this is going back 6 or 7 years now. He became the designer baby doctor. People were freaking out. There were protesters on his front lawn. The political left and the political right, all the crazies came out and were upset about it, and the religious people and that sort of thing. So anyway, all this controversy, and one day the phone rang, and it was the Vatican. The Vatican called him and said, you know, he wanted to have a chat with him, because they have scientists at the Vatican, and, you know, they're always interested in how Catholicism merges with science and that sort of thing, and they wanted to talk to him about that. Anyway, so they had a long chat about it, and they kind of said, you know, you probably want to cool this off for the time being, because it's, this is not going to go away. And we're not sure if the church is ready for this and that sort of thing. So, and he thought, you know, it's probably not a bad idea. So he backed off on it. But he still has a list of hundreds of people who want to choose curly hair over brown eyes over whatever it is, right? Like, to this day, it just, the society is not ready to do baby design at this point, even though the capability is there. So that's the
interesting
crazy designer baby.
That's
story.
The moral and ethical debate.
Yeah.
And also the fact that there's still human memory of eugenics and the Nazis and breeding, you know, blue-eyed, blonde-haired Aryans. And so that sort of, if you like, this is not looking from the future back, looking into the future and being scared. This is, in some cases, looking to the past and seeing what was done in the name of, you know, in the name of making a better human, or the master race, as it was called. So I guess that debate still needs to be prosecuted, and people need to be brought along with it. I mean, you'll always have crazies. You'll always have people who will, no matter what you say or do, will just say, no, it can't happen, it's not right. But I think if you bring the population with you in the debate, you've got a much better chance of them saying, well, yeah, look, I understand that. I understand what the technology is. I understand what they're trying to do. And you've eased my concerns about it.
Exactly. And I think where that debate is going now, and it's kind of matured a little bit, is, hey, listen, not only can we cure, we can choose brown eyes over blue eyes and that sort of thing, but we can also ferret out genetic disorders and disease. And so the debate's moved into, well, if we can do those kinds of things, we can also produce babies that are disease-free and genetically clean from that perspective.
Now, there was a movie, talking science fiction, which I just can't remember the name now. It's got the tip top, which was exactly like that, where you had a situation where...
Gattaca?
And that was interesting, because it was exactly what you were saying. You know, there was, it was an era where you could get rid of all diseases and that, buy that. And then there was a group of people who either couldn't because they couldn't afford to or wouldn't. And they are the ones being discriminated against because, if you like, they were ordinary humans or they were born out of that situation. And it was quite an interesting movie.
Well, that's the future we're living into. So,
yep.
Anyway, interesting debate. We could talk for hours on this, but thanks, guys, for the opportunity to have
Thanks, Andy,
chat.
For being on. Appreciate your time. Thanks, Kay, for coming on.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
When are you guys making a trip to Australia?
Well, one of these days, I got to say, I've been thinking about it for 10 years, so we'll have to get in an airplane and come sometime, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
A little Albert cyborg.
Probably. Yep. That'd be awesome. Where can they get hold of you on have any more questions for you guys?
Yeah, you know, you can, the readsuperu.com is the nexus for it all. Free chapter there. You can download it, get hold of us that way. All our social feeds are there. SuperU book on Twitter, readsuperu on Facebook. You type in the book name, you'll find us.
All right. Too easy. Thanks, guys, for being on.
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Have a good one.
Thank you. Also, Jacob, you want to do a shout out to Ashley?
Yes, Miss Ashley Smith.
Yes, she donated $5 the other day, so thanks for that, Ashley, for sending that to our PayPal. You rock. You're a legend. Daryl Hunt, any last words before we wrap up, mate?
Yeah, look, just a big thank you to our patrons, Patreons. And also, we've got a new, because from the list we read out last week, we've got a new addition in Hannah Silver.
Hannah Silver, yes.
Of course, been on Tech Webcast a number of times. This is a really nice person and a wonderful musician. She has donated a monthly patron of $3 a month. So a big shout out to Hannah Silver.
Yes, and shout out to everyone who has been a patron so far. You all rock, and you're a legend, and hopefully we can give you something back in return for doing that, which I'm all trying to work on at the moment. Daryl, where can they hold you on Twitter?
At Twitter at Learnscape, and at Google Plus. I'm still at Google Plus.
Close the door and don't come back.
Interesting thing of the technology side from Google Plus. Another element has been torn from the bosom of Google Plus, and that is Hangouts on Air. It's not disappearing completely, as some tech blogs had in their headlines, but it is moving to YouTube Live, which is probably a more logical place for it. But it's just another element disappearing from Google Plus. So you wonder what the future is for Google Plus. But that's for another time.
Yeah, well, maybe they should just close the door and shut it down, maybe.
Yeah, I'll switch the light off for them.
All right, you can get me on Twitter at Brad Ozen, Tech Webcast. Jacob Jones, what about you? What's your view on Andy Walker in the book? Are you going to get the book, mate?
It's very cool, and you can find me at jazzbot32669onesie.
And thank you to you and your mum for the patron, by the way, for the donation, $4 a month. Thanks, appreciate that, Jacob.
Jacob.
And thank you to you too, Daryl. Thanks, mate, for your...
Well, no problem. No
problem. For your help. Everything helps. Let's go to Steve. Steve, there.
You can find me on Twitter as chatterbox_live. And it was a great show having Mr. Walker and his wife.
Yep.
It was very interesting too.
We've actually had Annie on before, Annie Walker. He's actually been on a second time. It's been on.
Cool. I'm also, as well. But yeah, it's one of those topics that you could have
talk for hours and yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's really interesting.
Exactly. So yeah, check out his book. So his book looks great, and you should go and get it and check it out and stuff. And yeah, go and get it. What else, Daryl? Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I think another tech webcast is in the can.
That's it, mate. Jacob, thanks, mate.
You're welcome.
And shout out to Ashley. Thanks, Ashley, for the donation.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Tech webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech webcast. 'Cause technology, it moves so fast. Tech webcast. Ha! Stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech, tech, tech. Tech webcast. Ha! Ha! Tech, tech, tech. Tech webcast.
Big ups to Andrew, to Brad, Jody, Steve, and Jennifer. Boom!